Hey there, Vermont Edition listeners. Hope you got a stack of pancakes because we have sugared off this episode until it's short and sweet. I'm Vermont Edition producer Andrea Lorien, and I hope you enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lefrak. A self-described tattooed gringa Rican punk novelist has a new book out about an older woman who's managing grief, uncovering family history abroad, and exploring a newfound superpower. Later in the show, we'll speak with Vermont author Anne Davila Cardinal about her new book, We Need No Wings. But first, what does it mean to love a forest? For Ethan Tapper, love is hard work. In his forthcoming debut book, How to Love a Forest, he walks us through the fragile and resilient ecosystem that is a forest. And he argues that it takes hard work to preserve these forests we love, work that can be counterintuitive and even at times heartbreaking. Ethan Tapper grew up in Saxons River and now lives in Bolton. He's the former Chittenden County forester and is also the lead singer of the punk band The Bubs, who have a new album out. We'll talk about that later this hour. Ethan, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thanks so much. It's such a thrill to be here.
We're so glad to have you. And listeners, you can join the conversation as well. We put out a call on Instagram earlier today about your favorite forest. We want to hear where you love spending time in the woods. You can also call in and tell us about it. 800-639-2211 or email vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Now, Ethan, basic question first. You spent 7 or 8 years as Chittenden County's forester. What exactly is a forester?
That's such a great question. So as a county forester, what we really are is service foresters. And in Vermont, if you live in Vermont, you have a county forester. There's 13 of them for the 14 counties. And what they do is basically help people understand how to care for their forests. It's really, really important because in Vermont, we're 75% forested and like 80% of those forests are privately owned. And you don't need a degree. You don't need any to pass any tests to become a forest landowner. You just are. But of course, we all rely on those forests for our quality of life. They make our state beautiful. They make our green mountains green. They provide clean air and clean water and all those things. So what the county foresters do is advise private landowners on how to care for their forests. What most foresters in Vermont do are what I do now, which is to be a consulting forester. You're a private forester. You work for private landowners. And again, just helping them understand how to care for their forest.
So as many Vermonters know, much of the state was logged back in the 1800s and turned into agricultural land. Can we still see that legacy, even in forests that might look like, you know, they've always looked that way?
It defines our forests. You really can't understand Vermont's forests without understanding their history. Our forests are really young. Most are like 60 to 100 years removed from being a field. And what I tell people actually is, unless you've been to one of our few remnant old growth forests, which are like less than a tenth of a percent of our forest,
wow,
less than 1,000 acres statewide, every forest you've ever been in was an agricultural field in the 1800s. And most of them maintained as such for 100 or 150 years. So now what we see is our forests are relatively young. And they can have big trees, but they haven't yet had time to develop all of these qualities and attributes that define forests on our landscape for thousands of years. Qualities that we find in old growth forests, like big old trees, dead wood on the ground, different sizes and ages of trees, what I call multi-generationality, all of these really interesting qualities, which are also really, really important to providing habitat for all parts of our biodiversity.
So you partially answered my next question here, which is visual markers of an old growth forest. For somebody who has a relatively untrained eye, what are some of the ways that you would know that you are in one of these rare in Vermont old growth forests compared to a younger one?
Sure. I mean, I think it doesn't look like people think it looks. And one of the really interesting and I think cool things about working with people in forests is how consistently we misunderstand what a healthy forest actually looks like. So most of the forests that we have, because they grew out of these old fields, they are dominated by a single age of trees. And to most of us, that looks really great. Pretty much everybody thinks that a healthy forest, a well-managed forest, looks like a park. When in fact, that's almost the opposite of what they really look like. So what we see in what I would call healthy forests and in our old growth forests are forests that are extremely, and this is in air quotes, messy. So they have some big old trees, but not a lot, like 10 to 12 big trees per acre. They're really as defined as they are by big old trees. They're defined by many different sizes and ages of trees, this multi-layered canopy, all of these different generations of trees that resulted from trees dying and the forest regenerating over and over again. And of course, you'd see tons of deadwood on the ground because no one was there to pick up that deadwood when those trees fell over. You see sometimes undulating soils. So we call it pit and mound topography. And what that is trees falling over, pulling up the root system out of the ground. Where they pulled out of, that creates this little pit. And then that root system, as it decays, creates that mound.
Like so a mogul.
Exactly. It looks exactly like moguls. And so I think it's really important to study these old growth forests, not just because they're so amazing and they're these primeval, amazing things, but also because we need to understand that those qualities that we find in old growth forests are the qualities to which most of the species in Vermont adapted to for thousands of years. And every single one of those qualities is now underrepresented in our modern day forests as a result of that agricultural history.
Hmm. Well, if you have questions about old growth forests, how to preserve them or identify one, or just a general question for Forester Ethan Tapper, you can call us at 800-639-2211. Ethan, you brought up big old trees. Where are the oldest, biggest trees in the state? So, what kind of trees are they?
Sure. Well, I mean, those might be two really different. The answers to those two questions might be really different.
Okay.
So the oldest trees probably are teeny little cedars growing out of cliffs over Lake Champlain.
Hmm.
White cedar is a species that can grow to be thousands of years old.
Wow.
And could only be, 6 feet, 9 feet tall. You would never know it, but they can be these really ancient trees. There's actually a really cool book called The Last Stand, which describes a very similar cliff cedar community to what we have over Lake Champlain that's in Ontario. And, no one thought to clear those trees because the forest is vertical. It's a cliff. And there was no value in those trees, so no one thought to cut them. And then when they examined those trees, they found out that it was actually one of the oldest and most intact old growth forests in North America.
Wow.
But none of those trees were taller than, 20 feet tall or something.
That's amazing.
And the biggest trees could actually be very young. So I think our state record tree is a cottonwood. Cottonwoods are one of our fastest growing trees, and that state record tree might only be 60 years old.
Hmm.
So we have many different species of trees, like 60 different species of trees in Vermont. They all grow in different ways and at different rates. They have different life strategies. Some, grow really fast and then die really young. Some, like the cedars, may grow really slowly and live basically forever.
Oh. So, Ethan, you bought a tract of land in Bolton back in 2017, and it is at the center of your new book. First, why did you decide to buy this piece of land?
It's a funny story. I talk about it in the book. I just had this dream that I was going to have this land, this homestead, a forest of my own. And I was working as a forester and taking care of other people's forests all the time. And I just really wanted to have my own forest that I could care for. And it's hard to do. I live in Chittenden County, Vermont. Land was pretty expensive, but I found this one piece of land that seemed pretty cheap. And so I went and checked it out. And the first time I visited it, my impression was that it was the most unhealthy, degraded forest that I'd ever been to.
Hmm.
And I remember walked for like 45 minutes and realizing sort of with a start that I hadn't seen any healthy trees. It was pretty dramatic. And the reason for that is, it had been what's called high graded. So high grading is the practice where you go into the woods and instead of doing good forest management, like most of us do, you just harvest the most valuable high grade trees, which are often the healthiest trees. So it's almost like reverse forest management, the inverse of how we want to do forest management, because you're essentially weeding around the least healthy trees and managing the forest to be less healthy. There's actually an argument to be made that it's maybe more harmful than a big clear cut. Because if you do a big clear cut, then the forest can regenerate and those new generations have a chance to be healthy. Whereas all this did was just give the least healthy trees in the forest plenty of room to grow. There was also deep ruts in all the trails. There was also a 30-acre infestation of non-native invasive plants and basically no native tree regeneration. There were signs of deer overpopulation. And, I walked through this area and I was like, forget this place. This place is lost. And then I started thinking about it and kind of dreaming about it, and I came back. And the second time I came to Bear Island, I started finding all of this cool stuff. And it convinced me that there was hope here after all. And that if I was willing to put in the work, that I could make this forest healthy again. And I ended up buying it. And over the last 7 years, it's been just my mission to do everything that I can to make this incredibly degraded forest healthy again. And I think that, you know, in the book, I talk a little bit about all the challenges that our forests face and how scary those are and how sad those can be. And initially, Bear Island was a symbol for all of that. It was like, you know, a symbol for what this world has become. And then really over the last 7 years, it's become to me a symbol of hope, because it showed me if we do all these things, if we do these incredibly bittersweet and complex actions to care for our ecosystems, what is possible? Like, we can do it. We can restore ecosystems, but we got to make some tough decisions, tough choices to do so.
I love that. So instead of buying a fixer-upper home, you bought a fixer-upper forest.
I did. You know, and just like people who often buy a fixer-upper home, it was also like the only forest I could afford. And I think about, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh, I wish this could be different, that could be different. And I was like, no, this is just what we get, you know, and we stand on these legacies of the past. And the only question really is, how are we going to move forward?
Well, in Vermont, there's often a lot of debate, a lot of consternation about which people are allowed on which forests and to do what. What is your vision for Bear Island in terms of humans' use of the space?
I think we need to acknowledge that our forests are what we would call socio-ecological systems, that we can't really separate people from forests. That said, you know, there's also something to be said for having places where, you know, the critters that live in our forest can just be themselves. And, you know, it's pretty much left to them. But I think we need to acknowledge that we will always need forests for many different things, to recreate in, to make our lives beautiful, to stay healthy, as well as these fundamental needs that we have from them, like clean air and clean water. We need resources from them. You know, wood is a local renewable resource. And I think we need to acknowledge what an incredibly vital and radical thing that is, that we can produce that from these ecosystems. And also, it's a balance. You know, I'm not here to say that anything we do in our forests is okay, that any use is okay, that, you know, it's really nuanced how we apply these different tools to care for our forests. You know, when we say enough is enough, when we say we need to do more. And I think one theme that, you know, I talk a lot in the book about managing these ecosystems, doing things like cutting trees, you know, and I want to acknowledge that the cutting of a tree is something that can be done in a way that is harmful. Of course, that's what happened to my forest. And it can be done in a way that is regenerative and vital and beautiful and actually essential to helping these ecosystems move forward.
Well, we've asked you, our listeners, to call or write in and give a shout out to your favorite local forest. We have Xenia calling in now from Barrie. Xenia, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. My favorite forest is in Glastonbury, Vermont. That's in southern Vermont, next to the town I grew up in, Shaftesbury. And Glastonbury is unincorporated, and it's mostly wilderness. The Long Trail goes through there, and I saw that forest a great deal from the Long Trail, but also the part real near where I lived, the Glastonbury, camping there and then making expeditions up the creek and through all kinds of different forests as we made our way up to where the brook began, which was a mountaintop swamp.
Oh, a mountaintop swamp. That sounds like a great place to explore, Xenia. Ethan Tapper, are you familiar with Glastonbury?
Not really. That's sort of Adam. I'm mostly focused here in northwestern Vermont. I grew up in southeastern Vermont, but it sounds beautiful.
Yeah, we had a couple folks on Instagram write in with a shout out to their favorite forest. One person did write in about Glastonbury. We also had people write to us about Green Mountain National Forest, C.C. Putnam Forest, Hinesburg Town Forest, Wilmington Area Woods, and many more, which we'll share in a little bit. Let's take another caller. Brenda in South Burlington is on the air. Brenda, go ahead.
Hey, good morning. I just wanted to give a big shout out to Ethan. He led a tour of Catamount and showed us the work he's been doing over there. And he makes forestry very fun. I'm a master gardener, but I don't know very much about trees. And I did have one question besides the shout out. I was driving to Middlebury last night for the Julia Alvarez event. And Michaela did a fabulous job interviewing her.
Thanks, Brenda. And a note to our listeners, you'll be able to hear that interview with Julia Alvarez in a couple weeks on Vermont Edition. Go ahead, Brenda.
Okay. And the woman I was driving, my neighbor Susan, pointed out her favorite tree, which was a catalpa. And I'm not familiar with that. I know that everybody's trying to do diversity of trees. Does that belong in the Vermont habitat, I guess?
Oh, thanks, Brenda. Ethan?
Sure. Yeah, catalpa is a species. It's, I believe, native to North America, but not native to here. It's probably a species that it's fine to plant by your house or something like that, but we wouldn't see in the woods. Oh, and also, thanks for the kind words. Brenda was talking about the Catamount Community Forest, which is this public forest in Williston that I did a bunch of work on when I was the county forester. Very special place.
Why the name Bear Island?
It sort of just happened. You know, I think that we were talking about before the break about I visited this land one time and was like, this is too much, too hard, too degraded. And I visited a second time and found all this cool stuff. And one of the things I found was that it was like optimal black bear habitat. And I really like black bears. I encounter them sometimes in the woods and they're just goofy, silly animals most of the time. And if the reason it's called Bear Island, the island is an old Vermont place name thing, you know, like Pine Island here in Chittenden County, Snipe Island in Richmond. Just sort of a place that's sort of isolated, like it's a little place of its own. And Bear Island feels like that. You're standing on these big, huge cliffs and you're overlooking the highway, you know, and this big valley, the Winooski River Valley. And it just feels like you're on an island.
Mm. We have another call from Sister Lorian in Berlin. Go ahead.
I'm wondering if there is anything you could suggest to give trees some rights. And the way things are now, if you own some land, you have the right to cut down any tree you want to cut down, and it seems to me inappropriate. Can you suggest some way to protect some trees?
Mm. Thank you for calling in. Yeah, that tension between protecting trees and also occasionally needing to cut them down for many different reasons. Ethan, can you speak to that?
Yeah, and I think that's something that foresters navigate all the time. And, you know, I know that the cutting of a tree can be, like, jarring and sad. I think it's important that we place, you know, the lives of these trees within the broader context, which is forests, these ecosystems within which tree mortality is really, really important. But that said, you know, I have a chapter in my book about freedom and sort of balancing what is our individual freedom, you know, our right to do these things on land that we might own, for instance, versus this collective freedom that we all share, the things that all the benefits that we all receive from forests all the time. And I think it's a valid question. You know, we all are relying on these ecosystems for our lives and our quality of life. They may be, you know, in Vermont, 80% of these forests are privately owned. But we're all receiving benefits from those forests. And so I think they are worthy of protection. The interesting thing, though, is that the most important thing that we can protect them is to keep them as forests, to conserve them, to protect them permanently so that they're not converted to some other type of use. And with our conservation community, we can see the responsible management, which may include the cutting of trees, of forests as actually part of protecting them. Part of, you know, helping manage for our biodiversity, part of protecting all of these other attributes that make them so important. They're not just important because they're forests. They're important because of all of these amazing things, the way they support our biodiversity, the way they support our wildlife, the way that they benefit us ecologically and economically and culturally, all of these things. And so it's a complex question, you know, and we should really be thinking hard about when we manage forests, but the cutting of trees can actually be something that's a really good thing if done in the right way.
Let me share a couple other shout outs to local forests that you shared with us on Instagram. One person wrote in about Wilmington area woods. Another person loves the woods around Northern Vermont University in Johnson near VTSU. One person says that they love the conservation area in Marlboro around Potash Hill. And we got another shout out for the North White Cedar Swamps. I'm not familiar with those. Are you, Ethan?
Yeah, they're just really, really cool ecosystems. They are swamps, which are dominated by northern white cedar, just like they sound.
Very cool. Well, Ethan, I want to make sure that we, in this interview, honor both of your lives, which probably, I'm hoping, overlap in some way that we're going to get to in this interview. You are a forester, an author. You are also a musician, part of the 10-piece Burlington-based punk band, The Bubs. They just released a follow-up to their 2020 album, Cause a Fuss, late last month. It's called Make a Mess. And let's play a clip from the title track of this album, Make a Mess. That's Make a Mess, the title track off the new Bubs album, Make a Mess. Ethan, do you, first, just to draw some connection between forestry and punk, do you ever listen to music when you're out in your forest, or are these two very separate worlds for you?
They're not, I realize how they're more and more intertwined all the time.
Yeah.
But to answer that first question, I don't listen to music out in the woods. I'm a big birder, and so I'm listening for birds.
Nice.
That's usually what I'm doing, but... yeah, music has become this other part of my life that supports it in other ways.
Yeah. So what connections have you started to see between forestry and punk music?
I mean, it's just, you know, it's really interesting. One of the fun things about promoting this book, How to Love a Forest, is sort of having to piece apart, as I'm interviewed and things like that, all of these different little origin stories and connections between things. And, you know, with respect to the band... One thing that I've realized is that I do all this stuff. I manage my own land. I help other people manage their land with my consulting forestry business. I write about forestry. And this music thing is the only thing that feels like totally different.
Hmm.
And actually, as a young forester, I was worried about being this vision of like what a forester was supposed to be, what I thought they were supposed to be. And I thought that people wouldn't respect me if they knew that I was like in this punk band. And as time has passed, you know, number one, I've realized that just a forester is whatever I am, you know, and trying to sort of like reimagine what that could be. And of course, we're all a lot of different things. And then also to just realize that I wasn't giving people nearly enough credit, that these loggers and foresters and landowners that I work with think that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, and that one song that you played, Make a Mess, is actually, interestingly, the only song that is sort of about forest ecology of all the songs.
Say more.
Yeah, so I talked about that these healthy forests, old growth forests are, you know, again, in quotes, messy. So they look messy to us. What we would call that in ecological terminology is they are complex. But one thing that I do as I take these relatively young forests, which are often dominated by a single age class of trees, and they haven't had time to develop all of these really important ecological attributes that we might find in, say, an old growth forest, I use forest management, the cutting of trees, to create those attributes. And when I'm doing that, I'm making a mess. You know, I'm turning this forest that looks good, but is actually, you know, missing all of these critical ecological attributes into a forest which is so much more complex and diverse and rich with life. And so sometimes when I'm, you know, working with a logger on someone else's land or I'm managing my own land, I'm just out there making a mess. You know, and I think that I like the idea that making a mess can be something that we do intentionally. You know, it can be something that we want to do, and we can acknowledge that messy things are not always bad.
Well, let's hear one more clip from the song Horses off the Bubs' new album, Make a Mess.
Somewhere about horses and somewhere about death.
So, Ethan, I grew up in Washington, D.C., which has this really storied punk scene with like Fugazi and Minor Threat and Bad Brains and all these legendary punk bands. Moved to Vermont, slightly different music scene here. And I saw you play, actually. I saw the Bubs play at Summervale in Burlington a couple weeks ago. It was an awesome show, but it also sort of highlighted for me the maybe some of the challenges that a punk band has to face when you're booking gigs. And just to set the scene for people who haven't been to Summervale, it's like a very family-friendly outdoor vibe with people eating pizza and like grandparents there with the four-year-olds. And you guys were rocking out. It was awesome. But it's not, you know, the typical like fiddle string band that you see at these kind of events. What's that been like for you and the Bubs to kind of, in a way, create that space for yourselves?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it was very incongruous at Summervale. We were like, what are we doing here? But of course, you know, again, not giving people enough credit. Everybody loved it.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different kind of thing. And, you know, that we didn't actually set out to become a punk band. It just sort of evolved into what it is. And I think that we inhabit sort of a special little space because, you know, we're not intimidating. We're not scary. It's not dark. It's just like a celebration.
You guys look like you're having so much fun on stage.
Yeah, that's the fact that we get to do that is such a profound gift, and we really try to feel it, you know, when we're doing that, to realize like how cool this is that we get to rock out this hard. And I think that that makes us, you know, a punk band that's going to get booked at Summervale, you know, or a punk band that might get be part of this scene in a different way. But there are also like a lot of other cool bands in Burlington that are in the punk space as well. But I think we're sort of in a unique little niche of it.
Yeah. Well, 10 people is a lot for a band. How exactly does that work? Like, that's a lot of people to both fit in onto a stage and split money with.
Yeah, yeah. None of us have ever taken any money from the band. That's the secret to that.
Ooh, okay. that helps.
Yeah, but yeah, it's complex. But that's also like what makes it so special. You know, and we sort of have the energy of like when you get together with a bunch of your friends in town, just like whoever is in town gets to be in the band.
Yeah.
And you know, you all make a band together. And so that's sort of what we did. And it makes it complex when we're trying to schedule stuff and go on tour or whatever. But it's worth it.
Yeah. Well, let's take another call here. And if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Ethan Tapper, who is a musician with the punk band The Bubs, as well as a forester and the author of a new book about foresting called How to Love a Forest. Let's go to Jen in Cabot. Jen, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks so much for taking my call. We tend a beautiful, rich forest here right at the headwaters of Winooski. And we have a small farm, so we've planted some bur oak, and we have a neighbor who has some different kind of oaks as well, and we're starting to find them down in the woods, different varieties of oaks than what we have here natively. And we're just curious, you know, do we pull them out like we would with some invasives, or do we think, well, this might be a natural succession, especially considering the ash borer and how much loss we may have in the future there. So
thanks, Jen. Ethan?
So I think that, no, don't treat those bur oaks like they're an invasive species. It's actually something that we are trying to do, recognizing that forests cannot keep up with the pace of climate change. And so we're doing something and doing a lot of research on this as well, doing something called assisted range expansion, which is where we take some of these tree species that are at the northern end of their range and help expand their presence in the northern end of the range. Those species are most notably oaks and hickories. So we have some native oaks and hickories, but not a lot in Cabot, I'll bet, and not a lot in a lot of parts of northern Vermont. But we're recognizing that as our climate changes, it may become increasingly well-suited towards some of those species, increasingly less well-suited to some more cold-loving tree species. So yeah, that's a native species. Keep it. And I think that that's something that actually we're thinking about is planting out some of these oak and hickory species specifically and other climate adapted species into our forest to help them cope with climate change.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jen, for calling in and good luck. Ethan, you are embarking on a book tour when this book comes out September 10th. Also, assumedly promoting the new Bubs album. How are you balancing these two?
Well, so, you know, not very well. And thank you very much. And but mostly the book tour is mostly focused on promoting How to Love a Forest.
Yeah.
And both things are really important. And both things I'm really, really proud of. But yeah, those book events are going to be mostly book events. And I thought about it. I was like, maybe I'm doing 45 events over the next 2 months. And I was like, what if we all went on tour and we did a played a show in every town and you know.
Yeah, sell your book at the merch table and merch at your book table.
It would be really cool, but easier said than done.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that book tour is going to mostly focus on How to Love a Forest. And I'll be doing readings and talks all over the Northeast over the next couple months.
That's great. Ethan, lastly, I'm wondering if you could help us, assuming, but I'm assuming that most of our listeners right now are not in the middle of the deep woods. I'm wondering if you could help paint a picture of Bear Island for us, maybe one of your favorite spots, a place that you spend a lot of time these days. What does it look like, sound like? Why do you love it?
The second time that I went to Bear Island, one of the coolest things I found was this rock outcrop that's just covered in reindeer moss. It's a natural community type that we call dry oak forest. These little stunted trees and all of these just species that can grow practically on no soil at all. Reindeer moss, huckleberry. I saw this plant that I love called pink corydalis that I'd never seen before. And it's just this really cool place where you can just look out over the Winooski River Valley and look out over this forest. And now I like to go there because in order to go there, I have to walk through this forest that using forest management as a tool and using stuff like my chainsaw and my skidder, I have transformed. You know, I've been walking that walk for 7 years, and now it is just so much more healthy and so much more diverse and so much more rich with life. And that's sort of like, you know, the walk I take when I want to sort of really internalize the passage of time and how much things have changed. And by the end of the walk, I always feel pretty hopeful.
Ethan Tapper's new book, How to Love a Forest, comes out on September 10th. You can join him for a book launch celebration in Burlington with a friend of our show, Bridget Butler, the Bird Diva. And you can learn more about his band, The Bubs, and find a list of their upcoming shows at thebubsvt.com. Ethan Tapper, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.